Hey everyone, I'm Susan Campbell and you're listening to Unfiltered, a podcast where my team of marketing professionals share their thoughts on all things branding. You'll laugh, you'll learn, and hopefully walk away with new info about how to market your business. Enjoy.
So we are here with Unfiltered Marketing, and today you're going to get to hear our first guest that we had on the podcast. His name is Dan Danford. He is the founder and CEO of Family Investment Center, which is a local company in the St. Joseph and Kansas City market. And Susan, our boss, and Rachel McCoy, who is his account manager, had the opportunity to interview him. And Susan, just tell us why it was exciting to have Dan on.
Well, Dan is definitely one of our favorite clients. He was hard earned to get to work with him. His business, he's in the financial services industry, but his take on it is very different than a lot of businesses in the market that we're familiar with that are very focused on growing their portfolios as well as their clients. Dan's approach is very different, and he's fee-based. He is not working on commissions, and so he builds plans that are very specific to the success of his clients.
And you kind of go in depth more of that
during the podcast. We really do. So he has been hesitant to work with anybody for a long time. And he went to school for a marketing degree. So he was pretty skeptical that anybody could really bring value to the table for him. And Rachel actually featured his business on one of our Monday morning coffee blogs and sent it to him. And he read it. And his response was, oh my gosh, somebody gets it. And so that granted us our first meeting with him. And, you know, we've been working with him ever since. And Rachel and those who support her have done an amazing job getting him featured in Forbes and the Wall Street Journal and, you know, multiple times, and getting his expert opinion on a lot of things that are going on in the market, getting him to speak publicly, producing a lot of content and helping to communicate to his audience why he is different and why that's more valuable. And a lot of the work that we've done together, one of the reasons I think that we work so well together is Dan takes a very focused approach in the clients that he works with, where he listens to them. And by listening to them, then he builds plans for them that make sense for where they are and what they want to achieve.
And they're unique.
And we take the exact same approach in how we work with our clients. And so we have this symbiotic relationship where it's just awesome to work together. And Dan and I have a very high level of respect for each other and really want to get into even some collaborations in the Kansas City market where we're presenting, we're talking to the same people, doing a lot of things together. So we're hoping to see more of that to come. We haven't totally fleshed out that whole plan yet, but it's in the works. So it was very exciting to have him here. And he's got just such an interesting and intellectual mind. It's fun to dig into it, but he can bring everything down to a level that truly makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting about him is he's like this brainiac. I mean, Rachel says he's literally a genius. I mean, I don't know if that's a thing.
We haven't tested him, so I don't know.
But he is so relatable. I mean, he's just very down to earth. He's funny. I mean, I listened to the podcast and he's making jokes and it's just like, wow, this guy's like handling people's like estates and yet he can just feel like the guy next door to you and I. So I think that's probably one of his biggest strengths is that he's just very authentic. And another fun fact about Dan is that we actually got him started on podcasting, or Zach got him started on podcasting before we even started our own podcast. It was really one of those things where it's like, we're doing this for our client and it's so great and
it's
easy to do and it's a fun outlet. Why aren't we doing this for ourselves? Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like Dan was our inspiration to do this podcast and now he's on our podcast. So
full circle.
So we hope you enjoyed this podcast with Dan, our guest, and with Susan and Rachel. And let us know what you think.
Welcome to another episode of Unfiltered Marketing. We are really delighted today to have a special guest, Dan Danford. I'm sure that many of you have heard his name and seen his name. He has a long list of media accolades across Forbes, Wall Street Journal, U.S. News and World Report, and many others. He's got his own popular podcast, Money is Freedom, which you can catch anytime. And you may have picked up a copy of Dan Danford's new book, Stuck in the Middle, on Amazon. He's also a guest blogger on Investopedia, covering lots of jargon-free, straightforward investment topics that 99.9% of us will actually enjoy listening to. So I've also got Susan Campbell here today, president and CEO of SJC Marketing.
Wow, that makes me sound really impressive.
You are.
So you need two titles, Dan.
Principal / CEO.
There you go.
Do you put the pal back in principal?
Yes, we leave the pal in principle, just like we leave the fun in family dysfunction.
Awesome. Well, Dan is founder and CEO as well of Family Investment Center, and they are serving clients across St. Joseph, Kansas City, the Midwest, and many other regions. Their specialty is investment management, and Dan is, I can say this, truly a genius and probably the smartest individual in the investment world living currently.
I love that, because the dead ones have all moved on.
Yes. Of the living, you're the smartest.
Good.
So, Dan, we've got some questions today because you have lots of cool things to say and good insights, and I think everyone will enjoy hearing from your perspective. Let's start, though, with some conversation about your own journey. What has that been like for you, and what are some moments that helped define your career path?
Well, I never set out to be an investment advisor. Went to school and got a bachelor's degree in business because I thought that was expected, but actually enjoyed the English literature courses more. So I probably have as many good grades in English lit courses as I do in business, especially I used to say I was the only MBA ever that didn't have a lot of hours in accounting because I just deplore all the number crunching. So I guess I've always kind of had a bent towards entrepreneurship, even though I kind of started out in the finance business as a banker. I went to work in the trust department of a bank, and after enduring a bank failure and a hostile takeover, four of us left to start our own trust company. And that probably defined my career as much as anything.
What was going on at the trust company that caused you guys to want to leave?
I was the youngster in the crowd, and the other three officers who started the trust company with me had been with the bank for many, many years. And after the bank failed, which didn't have anything to do with trust at all, and after it was acquired by a new bank, they felt like the new bank didn't treat the customers the way they wanted. We actually put together a package and tried to buy the trust department from the bank, which they declined. And so the four of us left and started our own and basically provided those kinds of services to people that they'd been working for, you know, decades.
Interesting. So you created a path where you could engage with your clients the way you wanted to instead of the way the bank wanted you to.
Absolutely. And 10 years into the trust company, I decided I needed to do that again. The trust company was very successful. We were better than anybody thought we were going to be. But I was the youngster and I hadn't put much money into it. And it wasn't as financially rewarding for me as it was for my partners. And so I had this period of time where I was sort of dissatisfied, but nobody around me really knew it. That gave me the time to kind of explore what it is I wanted to do. So when I started Family Investment Center in 1998, I created the blueprint. It was what I wanted to do, and it operates even today the way I designed it.
Oh, that's fun. I love that.
You told me once, Dan, that you had a job in college selling furniture?
Yeah, it was right after college. I actually, when I finished my bachelor's degree, I took a job selling office furniture, and I enjoyed it, but I hated the sales commissions. It was a situation where we represented a lot of different lines, and the different lines had different compensation systems. Some of the lines would be offering contests and things like that, which was fine with the guy who owned the company because it was a way to reward his salespeople without reaching in his own pocket.
Sure.
But I was always offended that it meant I was selling this particular line to a client because it was better for me rather than because it was better for them. And sort of that was sort of the genesis of the whole fee, no commissions kind of approach, is I just felt like there had to be a better way to serve the client with what they really needed.
Well, and that's such a perfect metaphor for what the investment industry looks like today. And you've spoken to this topic many times when we've gotten together, how so many others that are offering similar services to Family Investment Center are doing it on a commission basis. And so what they're offering their clients isn't necessarily what's good for the client. It's what's good for their pocketbook.
Yeah. And I'd also say that, you know, many of those people do the best they can for their clients within the framework of the company they work for. Mm-hmm. So if the company that they work for features commissions, and that's the only way they can put bread on the table, they probably choose the best products for their client from that little palette.
Sure.
The problem is that there are hundreds of other palettes out there that would be cheaper and better for their clients, and they never see that. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, that's really what we're all about, is we aren't tied to any particular products or any particular company, and that allows us to choose from everything. And it really does make a difference for our clients.
Sure.
And it makes a difference for media interview requests and questions as well. Through the years, if you put your name in, you'll see everything from Wall Street Journal to Forbes, Chicago Tribune, Yahoo Finance, everything. People find you, they seek you out because you have this unique voice. What would you say to listeners about doing business their way and sticking to that?
Well, first of all, I'd say, and Susan would acknowledge this, being in business is a lot harder than it looks. And there are a lot of people out there who think they want to be in business, but when they get out and realize how hard it is, they find out that, you know, having the security of that regular paycheck is actually pretty nice. But I will say that if somebody is persistent and they work hard and they have kind of a vision of what they want to accomplish, it makes it easier, because when the paycheck isn't that great or when the challenges come along, you know, it's something bigger than just making money that's keeping you focused and keeping you in the game.
Well, and that's to your point of creating that blueprint of what you wanted. And I was kind of the same way, you know, because you may or may not make the money you want to make right away, because so much of it either goes to your employees or you're funneling it right back into the business. So it needs to be something you love. It needs to provide more reward than just the paycheck that you were bringing home before.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing to me is that there used to be a Woody Allen thing that 85% of success is just showing up. Mm-hmm. And there's truth to that in business, is that longevity pays. I've seen so many people I know who started a business and they work so hard and they get burned out and they close the business or they sell the business right before it would have hit. Mm-hmm. You know, I even got a friend who started a business, lived in St. Joseph, worked really hard, got tired of it, sold the business to one of his associates, moved to another part of the country, and then the business just boomed. You know, it was just one of those things where, you know, it's just the right amount of time and stuff. And a lot of people quit right before they would have started making that money that they kind of dreamed of early on. So you have to hang on sometimes, even though it's not easy.
Well, and you don't always have that crystal ball to see that, you know, it is right around the corner. So that can be tough. And I agree. You see a lot of that happening, and it's kind of saddens you, especially in our market, where something that was a viable business, especially if it shuts down and it's done, well, that's an entrepreneur that walked away.
Exactly.
And that's sad.
I just cheer for people who try things. And even if they fail, I mean, this is what I've told my family members who are entrepreneurs. Even if you fail, you will have learned so much. You will be so much better an employee for somebody else later because you did that. So I try to be very encouraging of people, even when their ideas don't strike me as being an idea for success.
Yes. Well, there's, you know, the story of Walt Disney, who failed so many times. And I'm thinking I won't get as big as Walt Disney because I haven't failed hard enough.
And we should all do as well as Walt Disney.
Well, when we come back, we're going to hear Dan's thoughts on how he encourages individuals and families to map out their own personal freedom tour.
So it's time for your social wow, your workout of the week, where we challenge you to do something a little different and outside of your comfort zone on social media to get more listeners and be a little bit more creative.
So one of the things that Dan Danford has done that earned him significant reach was just this interesting post that he put on Facebook. We have a park here in St. Joseph that is the popular place to go at Christmas time for the Christmas lights that are featured there. One of the tunnels that you go through has a very large snowman that sits on top of that tunnel. It's a very assuming, very large, very creepy snowman. And Dan took a picture of that to him, that is the creepiest thing in the park, or something very clever that he put, you know, in that as a meme. And it had significant reach for him. It introduced people a little bit more to his personality. You know, Facebook isn't always the most profitable place to be for a business-to-business type environment. However, it does offer opportunities to showcase your personality a little bit and can soften that approach for people who may not want to talk to this individual who's very rigid on all of their social media platforms. Offering up a little bit of your personality actually invites them in and gives you something to talk about.
Yep, I love that. Anytime you can demonstrate your company culture and your attitude and give a little bit of your personality outside of your expertise is a really good opportunity. So that is your challenge. Be sure to share it with us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Give us a shout out so we know that you're working out.
We're back here with Dan Danford and Susan Campbell. Dan Danford is a special guest for us. He is a professional author, manages a super successful investment advisory firm. He blogs, he speaks, he guest blogs. What else do you do?
I make stuff up.
Well, he's very good at that as well. In fact, you will find his name associated with lots of major media sources and other resources online because he's incredibly smart about what he does. So we're enjoying the chance to talk with him today about some of these things. One thing that Dan is doing is changing the way people look at retirement and calling it their personal freedom tour. Tell me about how that concept came about and what your thoughts are on that.
You know, I always try to find unique ways to explain ideas. Basically, there are 10,000 books and magazines and articles out there on investing and finance, and I don't want to get just lost in the morass. I mean, I want it to be bigger than that. So one of the ideas that came to me was presenting retirement kind of like a tour of a rock band going around the country and performing in different places. And the idea was that whatever your picture is or whatever your vision is of retirement, you ought to be able to pursue that in that way. But then I spent some time talking about, you know, what's necessary to do a tour for a rock band. And, you know, it takes roadies and it takes musicians and it takes practice. And all those people are kind of professionals at their own part of the rock tour. And you depend on them and you need them to be there. We kind of have this notion in the country that you ought to go it alone. There's too many moving parts. I mean, it used to be retirement wasn't that tough because it was a 5 or 7 year period of time at the end of your life, and probably whatever you'd set aside would take care of you for that period of time. But now people live 30 and 35 years. My wife went, honest to gosh, my wife went to a baby shower this weekend, and one of the guests at the shower was 108 years old.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So, and I can guarantee you that whatever she and her husband set aside many years ago to take care of retirement probably has not lasted into her 108th mm-hmm. year. Those kinds of issues, you know, it's not a do-it-yourself thing anymore, or it shouldn't be, or at least it isn't as good as it could be if you do it that way. So that was the idea behind the Freedom Tour.
Well, it really puts something that can be complex into a nice, clear package. And it allows people to individualize what that would look like. For some, the Freedom Tour is a beat-up van by the beach.
Following the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, and others, what, $500,000 RV or maybe a tiny house. So I think that that was a great way to communicate some ideas. And I know that part of your success has been built around using stories and eliminating jargon.
A lot of people in the investment world use these special investment language, I think, to make themselves sound or feel a little bit more important. But most of the time when you use that talking to people, their eyes just glaze over. I mean, even if they know what it means, they don't care that you're talking to them like right. that. I get pretty excited with my employees and staff if I hear them using that kind of terminology and talking to clients, because I don't think it's comfortable for clients and I don't think it explains things the way it should.
So, Dan, you bring up this concept of freaks, and I think this is something our listeners would get a kick out of. So tell us about freaks.
So one of the problems that people have today is, especially with something like investments, where you don't know very much about it and you don't know where to turn, they tend to turn to people they trust. So they go to their relatives, friends, or colleagues. Friends, relatives, and colleagues. FRCs. So I call them freaks. And my argument is that that's a really bad place to get information. Because your friends, relatives, and colleagues, just for an example, your relatives, they will give you advice if you ask them for advice, but your relatives always protect you too.
Right.
So sometimes the advice they give you is too conservative for your situation just because they don't want you to get hurt. If you're finishing up your college degree and you go home to mom and dad and say, I'm trying to figure out two things. Should I start a coffee shop or should I go to work for this accountant that's going to pay me at, you know, whatever. They're always going to go for the accountant right. who's going to pay you and give you health care, right? It's the same thing that's true with money. They're going to give you the too conservative thing because they're trying to protect
safe
you.
Option.
Colleagues, another bad choice because, you know, colleagues tend to want to show off a little bit. So if you ask them about something, then they'll go off on, oh, well, we've done this and I've made all this money on this and blah, blah, and this is what you ought to do. But they sort of conveniently leave out the things that didn't work out mm-hmm. so well, you know? Even though those people, friends, relatives, and colleagues may love you and may want to help you, they aren't giving you objective advice. So I say stay away from the freaks.
Can
to get that in a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. My brother is a CPA. My parents are CPAs. And so he's the next generation and he's bringing the firm more into the digital age, if you will. So building a website, building a brand, doing some other things. And he spoke to much of the same concept of a lot of people when it comes to their taxes, their accounting. It's, you know, I talked to my neighbor and here's what, you know, he said I should be doing. And so our concept is you're going to put a newsletter out. Your neighbor is not your CPA.
Good. Perfect. That's yeah. The other one that we see that's very similar to this, but it's really important is Social Security. We actually have somebody on our staff who is a Social Security expert, and we buy software that helps you figure out your options and what you ought to do. But everybody comes in, they've talked to their neighbor, they've talked to somebody about, oh, I did this or do this or you got to do this. And most of it's just plain wrong. I mean, it is the wrong place to do it yourself. And even going to the Social Security office isn't a very good choice because they can't give you advice. I mean, they're basically going to say, here's your options, but they aren't going to help you sort out the options and figure out what works best for you. You really need somebody. It's too complicated to try to figure it out on your own.
And you guys are really looking at how soon someone should start to take Social Security and should they take it versus their spouse. I mean, there's a lot of different variables there.
We've done studies. And first of all, people who look similar aren't similar because they have different earnings histories. So that makes a change. But there are situations where the different options can amount to hundreds of thousands of dollars over the rest of your life. I mean, really can. And nobody knows how long they're going to live, so we don't know what the situation's going to be. But what we want is to put it in front of somebody and let them make an educated decision. That's what we want. You can't do that if you're talking to your Aunt Susie on the front porch about what she did for Social Security 15 years ago.
Right.
I think it was surprising to start seeing across media and from you that people, you've got a lot of options. Everyone thinks that it's a one and done.
For a lot of people, Social Security doesn't have a lot of options because they haven't saved anything and they get to age 62 and they need to draw.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's truthfully what happens. Unfortunately, your lowest possible benefit is when you're at age 62. Mm-hmm. I mean, your regular benefit for most of us actually starts at like age 66. And so anything you take before that is discounted for it. And anything you take beyond that actually grows in value up until you're age 70. So the difference between a 62 and a 70 can be 100%. I mean, it can be the difference between $1,000 and $2,000 a month. Doesn't matter much if you've got health issues or that kind of thing, but if you truly do live to be 95 or your spouse lives to be 95, it'll make a huge difference. There's no right or wrong beyond the fact that you ought to be looking at real numbers when you make your decision.
See, that makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. Another simple way to say something that people misunderstand. What are some of the challenges that you see clients facing? If you were on an elevator with us and you wanted to say these are things people are dealing with over and over.
I'd say the biggest challenge today is the abundance of information. I mean, it really is crazy, but there every newspaper or magazine you pick up, every TV show, news, they all have financial segments, and it all seems like it ought to be good information, but in truth, very little of it is customized to your own situation. I actually believe that, you know, a good advisor, probably their most important role is kind of serving as a filter for their clients. And when a client comes in and said, hey, I just read this article about XYZ, that advisor should be able to look at that and say, you know, XYZ may be a perfect product for this situation, but it doesn't fit you in your situation. Mm-hmm. Or I've seen other people like yours use this and it didn't work the way it was supposed to work. That's what I think a really good advisor does for people.
Well, and I think that's the role you should fill because there is so much information out there. Something that came up while you were talking, I read your book pretty quickly. I liked how it was geared towards a lot of us that are in that middle class arena. And it speaks to several different things. And one of the things that hit me especially, you speak to a generation ago where it was primarily the male in the relationship who was planning what the investments were going to look like. And generally that was to take care of the female because the husband didn't last as long. You have a lot of these widows who have a lot of money, but they don't really know where all of that money is or what the mixes were, why they were designed that way and different things like that. And now a lot of your focus is working with females and trying to help them to really take control of what their retirement's going to look like and have a more of a say in something that really is going to dictate how they get to live.
Yeah. And I used to start my talks to women by explaining, you know, all the women in my family, because I have three daughters and a wife and a widowed mother and a divorced sister. And, you know, we went through that whole thing. I used to say, even the dog is a girl. But the truth is that women face different needs than men when it comes to finances. And there's two primary reasons for that. One is that they do live longer. So most women will be responsible for their own situation at some point in their lives. Mm-hmm. That's pretty common. The other one is that women don't make as much money.
Right.
It's a sad truth in our society today. Even if they are funding their 401k and all that kind of thing, typically they don't have as much money in their 401k as a man would. Mm-hmm. Those two things create a pretty unique perspective. One of the interesting things that's happened in recent years is that the divorce rate has just skyrocketed among baby boomers. They get to be 60 years old and boom, they decide to break up.
Oh, wow.
I tell people it's because where you used to say, well, I can stand anything for another 5 or 10 years, now you say, I can't stand it for another 30. So I don't know. But that creates another whole thing, too. Now sure. You've got what was a family unit with certain finances that's been broken into two, and they mm-hmm. both have unique needs. So it's just one of those cultural things that's happening to us that creates some special needs.
What about the genders in terms of making decisions based on guilt? Or I should set some aside for this cause and I need to do this now because everyone does. Have you run into that?
Yeah, a certain amount. Again, based on my experience, women are much more open to learning than men. I think it's a cultural thing again. I think a lot of men think they're supposed to know about investments. So, you know, I do know about investments, so I'm not going to learn anything else. With things like books or educational material, things like that, when we give them to our women clients, they actually go home and read them and then come back and ask questions, and they're willing to learn. One of the reasons why we do so well with women is because they listen to us. Sure. They actually pay attention to us better than some of our men clients.
Sure. Yeah. And you spend a lot of time educating your clients. So that makes for good relationship building when they're willing to do that.
I like to think that my little niche in the world is that I explain things well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of people who can talk about stocks and bonds and things like that, but I can explain things well. If I've got a client in front of me, whether they're a man or a woman, if they listen well and they learn well, that's an ideal client. I've just found that there are a lot more women who listen well and learn well than men.
What'd you say, Dan?
Not once is enough.
I think that's a really good point from a communications perspective as well. You figured out what your sweet spot is, and that is that you can explain things better than most people. You can explain complex topics in a way that they make sense and they help people make the right decisions.
It's kind of interesting to me. St. Joseph is a very funny market, as anybody who works here knows. But since I've been writing for Investopedia, you know, I got a notice this weekend that something like 22,000 people have read the different articles on Investopedia. Well, the interesting thing there, of course, is they aren't St. Joseph people. Right. Investopedia is a worldwide thing. So right. Other people are reading it and they're getting something from it. It's way beyond just the local market and the people I talk to. That's fun for us, is that we can educate people that aren't even here anymore.
Sure, sure. Well, and making that tie to communications, I love that, because the other piece that Dan brings to the table, and he alluded to this earlier, that he'll take that information, that DIY information that's out there, and can help his clients assess whether or not that really makes sense for their situation. So you're listening to them. You're understanding where they are. You know, that's a key piece of, to me, that makes the difference between a good professional and a not good professional, is someone who's willing to listen and understand where you are and where you want to be and help you determine what that path looks like. Someone who is too focused on what they want you to do is someone that I think is kind of creating a path for a different direction and not a successful one.
It's the difference between marketing and sales. Mm-hmm. Is marketing listens and builds products and services that serve the client. Sales is somebody, you know, you turn them loose and say, this is what we got. Now go find customers for us.
Right. Exactly.
Speaking of listen, do yourself a favor and turn on SoundCloud or iTunes for Money is Freedom. It's Dan Danford's podcast. You'll get a lot of jargon-free information that could change the way your entire Freedom Tour looks. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dan.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Continue today's topic with us by tweeting your thoughts to Marketing SJC or visit our website, sjc.marketing.